Thank you for tuning into the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah. And as I mentioned in the first half of this episode, we will be looking at the lectionary texts assigned for this week, August 21st, 2016. And again, as always, if you are joining me for the first time, welcome. I'm so happy that you're here. I always like to give a little bit of background. And for those of you who are returning listeners, welcome back. And I do apologize that you've heard this before about the lectionary, but the lectionary is a series of assigned readings. It's over a three-year period, and each Sunday is assigned a series of readings, and those are split into the Old Testament, the Psalms, the New Testament, and the Gospels. This episode itself is split into two parts, and in the second part, we'll be talking about the New Testament reading from Hebrews 12 and the Gospel of Luke, chapter 13. In the Old Testament text for the first part of this episode, we spoke about Sabbath as well as giving God praise and thanksgiving. And the New Testament texts follow along similar lines, along similar themes, with the Gospel from Luke also discussing the topic of Sabbath, and the text from Hebrews discussing, among other things, worship and how worship changes us. All of these texts that are assigned for this week remind us of the amazing things that God has done in our lives and talk about how we then respond to those amazing things. How do we respond to the relationship that we have with God, knowing that God loves us and that love frees us to then love our neighbors? And I'm excited to get started talking about this with you today, but we do have to first take a quick break, and then when we come back from that break, we'll be talking about this week's text from Hebrews. So stay tuned and we will be right back.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's gsmcpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. The first text we will be discussing today is from Hebrews chapter 12, verses 18 through 29. And that reads, "You have not come to something that can be touched, a blazing fire and darkness and gloom and a tempest, and the sound of a trumpet and a voice whose words made the hearers beg that not another word be spoken to them. For they could not endure the order that was given. If even an animal touches the mountain, it shall be stoned to death. Indeed, so terrifying was the sight that Moses said, 'I tremble with fear.' But you have come to Mount Zion, and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to innumerable angels in festal gathering, and to the assembly of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, and to God the judge of all, and to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, and to Jesus the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. See that you do not refuse the one who is speaking. For if they did not escape when they refused the one who warned them on earth, how much less will we escape if we reject the one who warns from heaven? At that time his voice shook the earth, but now he has promised, 'Yet once more I will shake not only the earth, but also the heaven.' This phrase, 'yet once more,' indicates the removal of what is shaken, that is, created things, so that what cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us give thanks by which we offer to God an acceptable worship with reverence and awe, for indeed our God is a consuming fire." And again, that is from the book of Hebrews, chapter 12, verses 18 through 29. And this is the third of 4 weeks that we'll be discussing texts from Hebrews as part of the lectionary cycle. And as a reminder for those of you who did listen to the last couple of episodes, and those of you who might be joining for the first time, the community to whom this letter was written had been experiencing a lot of hardships, a lot of frustration, and the author was trying to encourage them to keep a strong foundation in their faith. the people had expected that Jesus, who promised to return, they expected Jesus to return actually within their lifetimes. And as time passed and Jesus didn't return, as things continued to be difficult and became difficult in new ways, and Jesus still didn't return, they began to despair. So in the text from 2 weeks ago, the author held up Sarah and Abraham as examples of faith because of their continued trust and their continued faith in God's promises, even though they knew that they would not live to see those promises fulfilled, even though they knew those promises wouldn't be fulfilled for several generations after their deaths, they still remained faithful and trusting in God's promise. And then last week, the author held up a whole bunch of other people of faith who had gone before, and he called these the great cloud of witnesses, and he said they were the ones that encouraged us as we ran the race of faith. They were the ones in the stadiums cheering us on and supporting us. Their lives weren't perfect or easy. In fact, most of them were the exact opposite. But they persevered and they held fast to their faith and to the promises God had made with them. And then today's text continues with these themes and builds on them further, although when you first read through, you may have thought, wait, how did we go from what we were talking about in the previous verses to now this, with the mountains and the shaking and the animals being stoned? And it is a little bit of a confusing segue. So we're going to look at some commentary that will help us to see where that segue happened, what the transition was, where the author is going now with this reading or with this text. And one of those commentaries is from Amy L.B. Peeler, who is the Associate Professor of New Testament at Wheaton College in Wheaton, Illinois. And she says that in a letter that has reverberated with rhetorical force throughout, the end of the 12th chapter of Hebrews presents the author's oratorical and theological tour de force. She says the audience can feel nothing but awe, awful fear in remembering God's presence on Sinai, and awe-full thanksgiving in receiving God's kingdom on Zion. And since I'm saying that and you're not reading it, she says awful, A-W-F-U-L, and then awe-full, A-W-E-F-U-L-L. So I'll read that again. She says awful fear in remembering God's presence on Sinai, and awe-full thanksgiving in receiving God's kingdom on Zion. And so then she looks at Mount Sinai. You see that there are two mountains here, Mount Sinai and Mount Zion. She looks first at Mount Sinai and says, before verse 18, the author issued one of his final and most chilling warnings. Do not be like Esau, who squandered his birthright and could not undo the consequences. And that's from Hebrews chapter 12, verses 15 through 17. She says the next section includes his typical comfort after a warning, but it takes him some time to arrive at the comforting part. First, he describes the terror of Mount Sinai. She says the scene around this place is ominous for the eye and the ear, with burning fire, darkness, gloom, windstorm, noise of trumpets and words being spoken. His collocation of terms echoes the retelling of Sinai from Deuteronomy chapters 4 and 5. The only term he adds to this is zophos, gloom, which is used elsewhere in 2 Peter and Jude to describe the abode of fallen angels, which only increases the terror of his description. You can see why I'm enjoying this commentary, I hope, because she's really, really descriptive and helps to bring this imagery to life even further. She says, the generation delivered from Egypt was so overwhelmed with this theophany that they begged for Moses to mediate communication to them rather than for God to speak directly. They did not want to be too close because they knew that God had commanded that anything would die if it touched this mountain. Hence, the fact that the author begins his description with the reality of this mountain could be touched only increases its mortal danger. It seems right that both the people and Moses were afraid. This terror, however, is in the past. The audience of Hebrews has not approached this mountain. Instead, they have come to Mount Zion. And I really appreciate Professor Peeler and this commentary because, again, you know, when I first read through things, I sometimes have this moment of, wait, what? And I don't know if that's just me or if you have those moments too, but I really appreciate commentaries like this one that speak with clarity and imagination and vivid pictures that help me to reimagine, re-see these texts that I'm reading and give me a better understanding. So the audience of Hebrews, she says, has not approached Mount Sinai. Instead, they have come to Mount Zion. And then she describes Mount Zion, saying, in the scriptures of Israel, Zion refers to the city of David, the elevated capital of Jerusalem. This is the city that belongs to the living God. And while those words alone might indicate the earthly tabernacle or temple, the author clarifies with the next phrase that this Jerusalem is a heavenly one. Although some texts of the Old Testament will describe the abode of God as Zion, only the author of Hebrews specifies that this Jerusalem is explicitly heavenly. This affirms his earlier interest in a city not of this world. And she says that's from Hebrews chapter 11, verses 10 and 13 through 16. She continues, the readers of Hebrews have approached the right mountain, but they have not ascended it. The author continues in his awesome tone by warning them to pay attention to the God who is speaking to them from Mount Zion. They know what happened to the Israelites who did not want to hear from God. And they are poised at the end of all ages. At the end of all the ages. God will soon, with his voice, shake all things. God has given them a kingdom that cannot be shaken, which likely refers to this heavenly Jerusalem. Their response then should be one of thanksgiving and service with reverence and fear. Awe must remain the mode of their approach because God remains fiery as he was on Sinai. His fire consumes his enemies, which they are not, but which the author gravely warns them not to become. He doesn't want them to miss out on dwelling forever on such a mountain. So she's giving us this this juxtaposition between Mount Sinai and the fear that people had of God, both fear as in fear and trembling, but fear also in the awe-filled sense of fear. And then this image of Mount Zion and this heavenly Jerusalem and this solid kingdom that God has given them, which cannot be shaken, even though God with his voice will shake all things. And so we're still in this place maybe where we aren't quite sure still where the transition is, but we're getting there. We've gone from the ancestors in faith, that great cloud of witnesses. Again, still looking at those ancestors in faith, the ones who came to Mount Sinai and were filled with terror because even, you know, an animal touching the mountain was to be stoned to death. You can understand why they were afraid. But now we've transitioned to Mount Sinai. And we do have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk about this text from Hebrews and these two different mountains and what that has to do with worship, etc., when we come back. So stay tuned, and we will be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. Before the break, we were talking about the text for this week from the letter to the Hebrews and talking about a commentary that talked about the differences between the mountains, Mount Sinai and Mount Zion, and how this changed perspective of worship, etc. And another commentary that I read this week is from Brian J. Whitfield, who is assistant professor of Christianity at Mercer University in Macon, Georgia. And he writes, this contrast underscores the advantages we gain from the new covenant Jesus makes possible, And he's talking about then this contrast, the contrast between Mount Sinai and the contrast between, and I'm sorry, the contrast between Mount Sinai and Mount Zion. And he's talking about the advantages we gain from the new covenant Jesus makes possible. A new access to God and communion with others in a vibrant city of joy. With these benefits in view, the writer turns to the heart of his admonition. We must not disregard the one who speaks to us, warning us from heaven. The Israelites did not escape God's words spoken on earth. How much more ought we to listen now that God speaks from heaven? At Sinai, God's voice shook the earth. But now God's voice shakes both earth and heaven, as promised to the prophet Haggai. So here we get an expanding on what Professor Peeler was saying, and Professor Whitfield is saying that there's this difference between Mount Sinai and Mount Zion. And again, Mount Sinai, there was fear and trembling and awe in both the awful and the awful ways. And so God's voice literally shook the earth at Mount Sinai, which only increased the fear. But now God's voice is shaking both heaven and earth. And he continues elaborating this point. The writer interprets the prophetic word to refer to a global destruction of created things, or what is shaken, so that eternal things, what cannot be shaken, may remain. So the created things are shaken and destroyed, but the eternal things, those things that cannot be shaken, will remain. And then here, the author returns to a theme he introduced at the beginning of the sermon. The earth and the heavens God has created will wear out like clothing that must be changed, but God is constant and eternal. He continues, for us, this shaking is a moment of crisis that reorients our lives. As a result of this process of judgment, we lose the things that can be shaken, all that is temporary or ephemeral. But in the midst of such cataclysmic trial, there is good news because that which cannot be shaken abides. Most importantly, what abides is God's unshakable kingdom, a kingdom we are receiving even now due to the new and living way to God that Jesus has opened for us. The awareness leads to joy and thankfulness because we participate in the eternal realm and kingdom of God. Through our participation in that kingdom, we may worship God aright with reverence and awe. And just as an aside here, if you listened to the first couple episodes, or to the last few weeks when we talked about Hebrews before, remember I said that Hebrews has been described as a bridge between the Old Testament and the New Testament. So you get this bridge from the Old Covenant to the New Covenant. The Old Covenant isn't destroyed, it's not negated in any way, it's not abolished, but Jesus comes and it's a new covenant, a new way of being in relationship with God. So things are transformed. And that awareness then, as this professor is saying, leads to joy and thankfulness because we are participating in God's eternal realm. And that actually connects back to what we talked about in the first half of this week's episode, from the Psalm, remembering with joy and thanksgiving everything that God has done for us in our lives. So then he continues with his commentary, to worship is to encounter God, to hear God's voice, to be transformed. True worship does not leave us as we are, at ease with illusions of our own power and significance. Rather, it makes us aware of the impermanence of all human lives and institutions as we bow in awe before the permanence, might, and splendor of our God, who is a consuming fire. The author of Hebrews continues to encourage the community, but now he is doing so in more ways than just giving them examples of faith. Now he's reminding them that God's promises are what they need to build their foundation on. And then even during times when things seem unstable or shaky, then they will have a firm place to stand. And so I love what this commentary says about to worship is to encounter God, to hear God's voice, to be transformed. And that's what worship does, right? When we encounter God, when we hear God's voice, when we are in relationship with God, then we are freed to go out into the world and continue to do God's work. Worship changes us, and encounters with God shake away the unnecessary in order to leave us with that firm foundation, that which comes from God and which will never, ever leave or be destroyed. When we are changed by these experiences, when we encounter God or worship, we are then freed, as I said, to go out into the world to share God's love with the world, to help establish God's kingdom here on earth. And this might seem a little odd after what we've been discussing the past couple of weeks from Hebrews, but it does all actually fit together because the author points out those examples of faith who have gone before and then moves into this section on worship and how that worship changes us. Because being in relationship with God changes us, just as it did for those examples of faith that the author pointed to. God has given us a kingdom that cannot be shaken, and our response then should be one of thanksgiving and service. And as I said, I think this ties in with the reading from Isaiah from the first half of this episode, as well as from the Psalm, as well as from the Gospel of Luke, which we'll be talking about in a few minutes. Both Isaiah and Luke have to do with the Sabbath. And if you remember from the first half of this episode, Sabbath is a justice issue about everyone having enough so that everyone has the ability to rest and be rejuvenated by that Sabbath. And we often think of worship and Sabbath at the same time because we often go to worship on Sunday, which for many is our Sabbath day. But in this way, I see a connection between this text from Hebrews and its view that worship should change us and send us out into the world, and the texts about Sabbath and everyone having enough. And this actually seems like a really good place to transition to the gospel reading for this week, so we're going to do that. And the gospel reading for this week is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 13, verses 10 through 17. And it says, "Now Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. And just then there appeared a woman with a spirit that had crippled her for 18 years. She was bent over and was quite unable to stand up straight. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said, 'Woman, you are set free from your ailment.' When he laid his hands on her, immediately she stood up straight and began praising God. But the leader of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had cured on the Sabbath, kept saying to the crowd, 'There are 6 days on which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be cured, and not on the Sabbath day.' But the Lord answered him and said, 'You hypocrites! Does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to give it water? And not ought this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 long years, be set free from this bondage on the Sabbath day?' When Jesus said this, all his opponents were put to shame, and the entire crowd was rejoicing at all the wonderful things that he was doing." Again, this is the gospel for this week from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 13, verses 10 through 17. And it tells the story of Jesus healing on the Sabbath and being criticized for it. And verse 11 says, "And just then there appeared a woman with a spirit that had crippled her for 18 years. She was bent over and was quite unable to stand up straight." Whenever I hear this story, I imagine what life must have been like for this woman. 18 years of being bent over, not being able to stand up straight for almost 2 decades then. She's been unable to look anyone in the face. Just think about that. What she has seen has been mostly feet and knees, maybe some torsos, but she hasn't really been able to look anyone directly in the eye for all of that time. All she's been able to do is look at the ground, see people's feet. Men at this time weren't supposed to look directly at women anyway, but because it would have been thought that she had done something to anger God, which resulted in her condition, no one would have ever looked directly at her. She would have been avoided and shunned because they would have seen this as some kind of punishment from God, that she had done something to deserve this. And like I said, I can't read this account without imagining what this woman's life must have been like. And we're going to talk more about this woman and Jesus curing on the Sabbath and what that means for what we understand about the Sabbath. But we are going to take our last break, and then when we come back, we'll be talking more about this text from the Gospel of Luke. So stay tuned, and we will be right back.
Do you want to be healthier, yet you just don't know what to do? All these shows telling you this and that, but nothing seems to work. Well, listen close. Golden State Media Concepts has got something great for you. The health and wellness podcast dedicated to workout trends, healthy eating habits, diet, and everything about healthy living. Join us in our banters as we help you not just live life to the fullest, but live it to the healthiest.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. Before the break, we read the text from the Gospel of Luke, which told the story of a woman who was bent over for 18 years and who Jesus healed on the Sabbath. And I said that I can't read this account in Luke without imagining what this woman's life must have been like. You know, only being able to see the ground, not really being able to look people in the eye, being shunned because people would have seen her ailment as being a punishment from God. But this day that the story is told, this day is different because Jesus looks directly at her. And more than that, he actually sees her. And in seeing her, actually seeing her, he's moved to compassion and he heals her. Like so many women in the Bible, this woman is nameless, and we really know nothing about her beyond these few verses that Luke tells us, and this account is only found in the Gospel of Luke. She's nameless, and she doesn't speak a word. She simply arrives on the scene. Jesus is moved to compassion on her behalf, and then acts accordingly. So he not only really sees her, but he moves over to her and touches her, possibly the first human touch she has had since whatever happened to cause her back to bend occurred, because as I said, she was probably shunned, seen as being punished by God. So just imagine what this day must have been like for her. Jesus' act of healing is one of compassion towards this woman, but it's one of provocation towards his critics. And as usual, Jesus is, you know, a little controversial. His actions caused some turmoil, this time because he healed this woman on the Sabbath. So the leader of the synagogue is indignant because Jesus cured on the Sabbath. And he says to the crowd, you know, there are 6 days that work can be done. So why didn't this woman come on one of those days to be cured? And well, I don't know what Jesus' schedule like. We know he's headed to Jerusalem. Who knows how long he was in this town? I'm just trying to put myself into this situation. But the synagogue leaders, saying this always bugs me. You know, there are 6 other days. Why couldn't she have come on those? Well, maybe Jesus wasn't around then. She took the opportunity that was presented for her, and who can blame her? Notice the word here, though, kept saying to the crowd. So he's not just saying this once. Apparently, he's repeating his argument again and again in order to make the crowd see his point, to force them to listen to what he's saying. Also notice that he's not addressing Jesus directly. He's addressing the crowd. He doesn't admonish Jesus for healing the woman on the Sabbath, but rather he talks to the crowd, telling them that they should keep the Sabbath and allow others to keep the Sabbath, and that this woman should have done that as well by coming on any of the other 6 days of the week to be healed. Jesus has once again pushed the envelope. He's healed on the Sabbath, and this leader takes issue. Maybe he's scared by the implications of Jesus' actions. Maybe he's just a leader who thrives on control and rules, and the rules he lives by have just been very publicly overturned. So we could understand that maybe he's fearful or angry, etc. In some ways, I do think that this nameless leader actually is in need of healing just as much as the nameless woman was. Not physical healing in this case, but he definitely needs some healing in his life because he's missing the point completely. But as usual, Jesus' reply shows that his actions are always based in love rather than simply a strict adherence to the rules. And he gets a little angry, a little snippy. Once again, he calls them hypocrites. He says, "You hypocrites, do not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to give it water? He says, so if you can do that for your working animals, shouldn't this woman who is a daughter of Abraham, who has been suffering from this for 18 years, shouldn't she be set free from this bondage on the Sabbath day? Jesus has been talking about love of neighbor throughout this journey to Jerusalem, love of neighbor, hospitality, etc. And this is just one more example of him living out what he's been teaching. He shows compassion for this woman, who immediately begins rejoicing and praising God after she is healed. She doesn't say a word before. She simply comes to where Jesus is, and Jesus sees her. But now she begins immediately rejoicing and praising God. And this makes me think about the psalm for this week that reminds us to not forget what God has done for us. Do you think this woman could forget that God had healed her? 18 years of her life, and life expectancy was not as long then. So who knows how old she was, how much of life she had left. But do you think she forgot that God had healed her? We ask then, what does this story tell us about Sabbath? Do Jesus' actions mean that Sabbath is meaningless and we should do whatever we want 7 days a week? What about that commandment, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy? Is Jesus ignoring that commandment? All of these are good questions to ask. We know from other places that Jesus didn't come to abolish the law. He came to show us a new way of living in that law, a way of expressing our love of God through love of neighbor. A way of using the laws in ways that ensure the welfare of everyone in the community. The idea of Sabbath is based on the fact that God rescued the Israelites from slavery. They'd been forced to work nonstop without the possibility of rest because they were slaves. And then, that's Genesis, of course, but in Exodus often uses the discussion of Sabbath as well, and then we see that context of the lesson from Isaiah from this first half of this episode, that keeping the Sabbath was primarily an expression of faith in God's abundance. So when you hear this story, who do you identify with in this gospel text? Do you have something for which you yourself need healing? Perhaps maybe you've received healing without even having to ask for it. Maybe you were seen in that moment. Maybe you identify with the leader of the synagogue, maybe worried that you might lose control of your own space, worried that deviating from the rules or creating change might create a situation of chaos. And lots of us have a love for the rules. I myself am a rule follower, but do you identify with the leader of the synagogue then? Are you one of the members of the crowd who's not looking at the woman or who's listening to the leader? Or maybe you're a member of the crowd, but you're rejoicing at the healing that has just taken place before your eyes. There's so many places that we can insert ourselves into this story to see this story through the eyes of the people who are involved in it. Everyone in this text from Luke, needs healing, needs the healing and rest that a true Sabbath can provide, just as each of us needs those same gifts. No matter with whom we identify, no matter what our ailments or our fears, Jesus sees us and sets us free from our ailments. We have been washed clean in the waters of baptism, often without even asking for it. We have been blessed with healing and with the gentle touch and ginormous, yes, I just said ginormous, with the gentle touch and ginormous love that Jesus brings to us. This gospel is about keeping the Sabbath and about breaking Sabbath law. And like all stories, this one has more than one side to it. So again, let's look at that leader of the synagogue, because what he offers is a clear and compelling reading of the law. We have law and we have gospel. You are not supposed to do any work on the Sabbath. Sabbath is a day for rest and renewal, and the rather negative view we take toward the various restrictions are associated with the Sabbath, But keep in mind that the laws, even Sabbath, were given to the Israelites, as I mentioned, after their exodus from Egypt, when they were slaves, when they never had a day off. So when they received a commandment to rest, to actually set aside one day of the week to rest their bodies and their livestock and retreat for a time of renewal and prayer, they heard this as good news, as amazing news. Which is what the leader of the synagogue is worried about. Because once you start making exceptions for this reason or that reason or, you know, whatever in between, pretty soon no one is really keeping the Sabbath. And then it loses its point altogether. And it's not just the Sabbath. We can say that the whole law is like that. Because if you keep making exceptions, then it's not really a law anymore. It's more like guidelines or a suggestion. with little or no power to protect and preserve us. But the other half of this story then is the woman who has viewed the world from waist level for years, who hasn't been able to look at anyone for as long as she can remember. She is, we can imagine, also a faithful, law-abiding member of this very synagogue. After all, she's there on the Sabbath, in spite of her condition, worshiping with her community. Perhaps she also harbored concerns about keeping the Sabbath. Perhaps she was downright conservative in her approach to the law more generally. Yet whatever principles or resolutions she may have entered with, I have to imagine that they all took a back seat to a sense of overwhelming relief and gratitude when Jesus saw her, when he approached her and healed her, when he called her a daughter of Abraham and restored her to full health. So what happens then to all those laws and rules and concerns and regulations? Do they just fall away as if they are of no importance? Nope. They were just suspended, perhaps temporarily forgotten in those first few moments of sheer grace and gratitude, which is always the way it is with law. The law matters because it helps us to order our lives and keep the peace. The law matters because it sets needed boundaries that create room in which we can flourish. The law matters because it encourages us. Sometimes it even goads us to look beyond ourselves so that we might love and care for our neighbor. We know that Jesus did not come to abolish the law, but simply to show us a new way of living in that law, to show us a new way of expressing our love of God through love of neighbor, a way of using the laws in ways that ensure the welfare of everyone in the community. Again, in the context of Isaiah, keeping the Sabbath was primarily an expression of faith in God's abundance. Every living being rests on the Sabbath because God has made enough for everyone. And if God has made enough for everyone, if the Sabbath is about everyone resting and enjoying that rejuvenation, then of course this woman should be healed as soon as possible, even if it is on the Sabbath, so she can enjoy that Sabbath, so she can have the rest and rejuvenation she has been denied by her affliction. It's easy to get wrapped up in the prohibitions of Sabbath keeping. Just what are we allowed to do or not do? But that is missing the point of Sabbath. And that's, I think, what we have seen through all of the texts for this week, from the Old Testament to the New Testament, keeping the Sabbath, making sure that everyone in the community has enough so that they can enjoy the Sabbath. And when they enjoy the Sabbath, they have that space to then worship God, remember what God has done for us in our lives, and through that, through the Sabbath, through the rest and rejuvenation, through the worship that changes us, we are then freed to go out and love our neighbor. We are freed to go out and share God's love with everyone that we meet. And that's actually all the time that we have for today. But I want to thank you for joining me as we discuss these readings from Hebrews 12 and Luke 13 that were assigned for this week of August 21st, 2016. I hope you'll join me again on Saturday when we go over next week's lectionary texts, the Old Testament text for that week of August 28th, which are Proverbs chapter 25 and Psalm 112. Remember, you can find all of the Golden State Media Concepts podcasts at www.gsmcpodcast.com. You can download the podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud, and you can follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. Again, Twitter and Instagram are GSMC_Bible Study. Tumblr is GSMC-Bible Study. Thank you once again for joining me, and always remember that you are a beautiful and beloved child.